We are in Alma 51. And the thing I love about Alma 51 is I do think the scriptures a lot of times give us awesome comparisons and contrasts. And I think this chapter specifically gives us incredible comparisons between the freemen and the kingmen, and between Moroni and Teancum in comparison or contrast to Amalickiah. And so we start right off, and it tells us that there were these men who wanted the law to be altered. And the disconcerting thing we find out very quickly is they want a king. They don't want the people to have a voice. They don't want the people to have a choice. And so these are people who think they're of noble birthright. They think that their name means something. And they think that their highest chief judge, Pahoran, should be dethroned and that they should go back to having kings, because obviously they think it would be one of them. And I just find that interesting, because I do think we have that even today, that we have people who think they were of high birth. It tells us in verse 8, they think they're of high birth, like their name, their family means something. And it's just an interesting thing, because I think that's happened through all of time. But the sad thing is that they want to do away with this incredible government that King Mosiah established, was so inspired to establish, that gave the people liberty and gave them choice. And it's all been voted on. And they're dismantling this. And this isn't a few people. This is a lot of people. And so Moroni causes, and Pahoran and the judges cause that the people vote, because it's a land of liberty and the people come in favor, which is huge, because that means the majority are still righteous of their government and of Pahoran remaining on the throne. Well, of course, those who are upset began to stir up the hearts, right? And they're angry, and they are not happy with the fact that they've been overruled. It's not like they come in and say, okay, that's all right, it's now been voted on. Well, at the same time that all of this is happening, Amalickiah tells us in verse 9, has stirred up the hearts of the Lamanites to come again, because he's taken this oath against God, sworn an oath against God, and to drink the blood of Moroni. And just, I love in verse 10 that it says this was rash. And the reason I love this word rash is because here's a word that so describes Satan. And I can think of many times in my life that I have acted rashly. And I'm hoping that over the course of my lifetime, I am learning to think through things without reacting, but to act thinking through. And it really has been a process of a lifetime that I've learned that. I can remember early on in our married life, when I would be in various callings and you would submit names, and it seems like you could never get anything done, or the bishop or the stake presidency didn't act as quickly as I wanted them to, I would get frustrated and just think, holy night, why does it take so long for them? And even I have thought that with my own husband. And the thing that I've learned is, because these men are acting in God's will, and so they don't want to move forward until they have God's backing. And I've loved how we've heard in conference talks how the prophets and apostles have said they have learned, until they are all unified and know the will of God, they will not move forward. So rash is really an opposition of that. Satan causes us to act rashly. He wants us to use emotion. He wants us to be angry. He doesn't want us to think through the consequences of our actions. And so I really love that word rash. And you could have a whole discussion on that word, on that word rash. Okay, now it tells us his army wasn't as big as it had been, but I love this too. He had gathered together a wonderfully great army. And I have that underlined because I don't know. I love when the scriptures use a word in a manner I'm not familiar with. We think of wonderful as being awesome and pleasant and great. And so someday as I read that, it's going to dawn on me what that means. But I have that underlined for now because I think it's great that it's titled a wonderfully great army, because in my mind, it's not a wonderfully great army, but there's a reason it's titled that. So I don't have anything to teach you on that. That's just something I'm hoping to learn about in the future. Okay. And it does tell us in 12, he comes down at the head of the Lamanites, which is just his pride. If you guys can't do what I've told you to do, what I've commanded you to do, I'm going to do it myself, which thank heavens, that is another tool of Satan, because it's a blessing that he comes down so he can be destroyed. Okay, in 13, the men who were called king men heard about this, and they refused to take up arms. Because if you go back, sorry, we should have done that. When that the free men, there was a division, those who were in favor, okay, I've got to look at this. Who saw authority. Oh, Moroni petitions the voice. We hadn't already done it, sorry. Moroni petitions the governor and says, can I cause them? Can I force them to do it? It tells us they were silent. And there it was in verse 7. Those who were king men were silent. They were smart enough to just keep their opposition to themselves, but it didn't go away. They were just quiet about it. And then Moroni sees this and he's so ticked off. And in verse 15, he petitions the governor. We know at the age of 25, they have so much faith in him that they give him authority to do whatever he says because they know he's a man of God. But I love the humility of Moroni here that he petitions the governor and says, can I force them? Can I compel them to fight for our country or put them to death? And he gets the backing, and thank heavens he does. And the thing I love about this is Moroni understands the danger of this. He understands that he cannot allow these men who are trying to take away liberty and freedom and take away their right to worship God to remain. He cannot allow this evil to grow. And he's seen this time and time again. He's seen it with Amalickiah. And so here it comes again. And it's so frustrating to know these men had the same upbringing he did. These were children of Christ. These were children of the covenant. These were children who had scriptures and had been raised in the gospel. And they choose to side against God, and he knows this will lead to no good end, and he's so frustrated. So he goes down and causes them to take up this cause of liberty, and it tells us in 19, 4,000 were slain. Okay, does that not tell you how huge this army of dissenters were? How many people can think they seriously are born of high birth? That's a lot of people. That is crazy. Okay, so they're hewn down. The others are cast into prison, their leaders, because they don't have time, it tells us, for their trials at this period. But if you go down to the footnote in chapter 16, verse 16, it will tell you what happens to them after their trial if you want to go there now and find out. But if not, we're coming to that. Okay, the remainder had to fight, it tells us. They were compelled, or they had to be killed. Okay, so they had to yield up and come and fight for the standard of liberty. And thus it tells us in 21, Moroni put an end to the king men, and there was no one known by that title anymore. And it put an end to the stubbornness and the pride of those who thought they were blood of nobility. And again, I think that's comical that there were so many. Okay, so Moroni is just a champion. He knows this will lead to no good end. And here's what happens. So again, here's a witness that it leads to no good end. While he is thus breaking down these wars amongst the center of them, guess what's happened? Amalickiah has come with the Lamanites into the land, and here's the first land they come to, Moroni. Those are those borderlands, remember, that he chased the Lamanites out of their wildernesses, and he built these lands all around the perimeter so that they couldn't come in. He's fortified them. And how disheartening is it that they come and Amalickiah gains Moroni? And it's not the only city he'll gain. We find out in this chapter he gains many. And the scary thing of that is they have now gained a stronghold. We know how Moroni has fortified, and here they gain this incredible stronghold, and they're going to gain more than one. And that is almost impossible to get back. Once that has been taken, how do you gain it back? And that is just so disheartening to Moroni, and he knows that, and that's why he wants and he petitions to have the right to either put them down, these king men, these dissenters, or to kill them, because he knows it leads to no good end. And he's so rightfully angry. He has given his all. He has fought to preserve and defend and do everything. And how can they do this? It's so frustrating to him. So he is truly such a great man of God. And then we get to Teancum. So it tells us that Amalekai comes and he attains so many cities, a lot of cities. And then he comes and he meets Teancum, excuse me, another great man of God. And in verse 31, it tells us, but behold, he met with a disappointment, being repulsed by Teancum and his men, for they were great warriors. Every man of Teancum did exceed the Lamanites in strength and in skill of war. And not only that, these were men of God. And I love this because Teancum is exactly like Moroni. He knows what's at stake. He knows who he backs. He knows who he's standing with. And it tells us after they have this war and they're going to bed at night, they're exhausted from fighting. It tells us in verse 34, Teancum stole privily into the tent of the king and put a javelin in his heart and caused his death. And I love this because he too can't stand. Here's another example of someone who knows you cannot allow evil to grow, that you have to know them by their fruits. You have to know them by their desires and intents, and you have to put an end to it because it is not allowed to grow, because it will cause the destruction of the Nephites. It will grow, and it is a cancer, and it is horrible. And I love that it shows these two men. Okay. And then he causes that his army should wake and stand in readiness. And then the very last verse I love, because here's the difference. Here's the stark contrast. And thus ended the 25th year of the reign of the judges over the people of Nephi, and thus ended the days of Amalekiah. And that's the end of this man who spent his life, who left the church, who left God, who cursed God, who gathered these armies to fight against liberty, who had such pride in his whole desire was to rule and reign in wickedness. And he spent his whole life desiring that, and that one sentence is the end of his life, and thus ended the days of Amalekiah. And now when he wakes up on the other side, his desires will still be the same. His passions, his appetites, we're told, will all be restored exact same. And if you have spent your life pursuing evil, that's what your desire will be. If you have spent your life pairing with Satan, that's where you will be. And here we have Moroni and Teancum, who have spent their life, and we will continue to see this, pursuing God and pursuing righteousness and defending liberty. And man, the reward that awaits them. And so I love that this chapter so outlines and is such an example to us of what our reward is for what we spend our lifetime doing. And yes, the righteous suffer right along with the wicked. And yes, this shows how awful it was for the city of Nephi to deal with these dissenters one more time, and how many people had to reap the reward of these people, these dissenters' wickedness. But man, the blessings that come to those who pair with God, and the backing and the miracles that happen for those who pair with God. And I love that example. The church is true, and God loves you.